Fiction can do much to bring history alive, taking us into the emotional core of a story. The emotions that roiled through the kingdom in 1893, the year of the overthrow, are the stuff of powerful drama for playwright Gary Kubota, whose new work takes us back to that time and into the life of a legendary Paniolo. The Legend of Ko'olau is about a man's struggles to keep his family together and survive, and Gary is with us this morning. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. Thanks for having me here, Chris.
And I guess fiction isn't entirely an accurate way to describe this, because you've added dialogue or monologue, but to a true story, a well-researched true story, yeah?
Yes, it's. I did primary research at the State Archives, went through the books, The Great Mahele, went through about 2 years of Pacific Commercial Advertiser and magazines, and had translations from Hawaiian into English done, basically to construct the events that occurred in as close to factual.
Let's summarize those events, Gary.
1892, Ko'olau and his family, his son and his wife, went into Kalalau Valley. He and his son contracted leprosy. 1893, there was this overthrow of the Hawaiian monarchy around January 17th. And things began to tighten in terms of the enforcement of leprosy laws. There was a deputy named Louis Stotes who went into the valley to try and get Ko'olau and force him to go to Kalapapa. Mm-hmm. And the Hawaiians at that time called it the living grave. And so Ko'olau had warned Stotes not to come in or he'd kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And Stotes came in and Ko'olau killed him. And Stotes was related to a missionary family. His wife was from missionary stock. And the missionaries had played a part in terms of the overthrow of the Hawaiian monarchy. So mm-hmm. they sent an army, more than 30 soldiers, a Krupp, a cannon, and then you had more than 20 deputies trying to capture Ko'olau.
If one guy and his family he presumably has got a rifle and not much more, right?
Right. But he was a crack shot. He had been a foreman of Hawaiian cowboys mm-hmm. at about two ranches. And he also knew the terrain very well. And, all of this is part and parcel of being a Hawaiian in Hawaiian culture and on land where he'd hunt.
It's kind of a classic American story. It's not America, but it's the kind of story that, it's a Western. It's a one man's defiance of the government, enforcement of unjust laws, all that.
Mm-hmm. And what makes it interesting, too, is it goes beyond just being Western in the sense that he was Native Hawaiian.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had one foot in the Western culture and another foot in the Hawaiian culture. And I think that as the play continues, one realizes that as he moves more toward the Hawaiian culture, he becomes stronger.
Mm-hmm. So he finds strength in that identity, even as his government, the kingdom's government, has just been overthrown. Yeah.
Yes, I think that Kalalau Valley is vast, as a vast wilderness,
mm-hmm.
and understanding the way the weather and the winds and the mist and rain flow throughout the valley and where one can protect oneself and how to drown out the sounds of walking and talking
mm-hmm.
played a part in his survival.
Sure, it's that, well, in a way it's that classic story of the individual who is familiar with his home terrain at home in the wilderness versus the interloper, yeah?
Yeah, it's also about someone who's reluctant to be in that position. He was clearly educated as a Christian, and his wife was clearly educated as a Christian. So I think that for the most part, they really probably weren't as comfortable doing what they did.
It wasn't in his nature to defy authority by any means.
No, I don't think so. And the thing is that Stotes actually was related to Stotes' wife was Reverend Rowell's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he had gone to Reverend Rowell's church and gone to the mission there. So it was a very, he knew these people and they knew him.
So as with history, as opposed to fiction, things aren't as cut and dried as sometimes fiction would have us believe.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that comes out is, you know, that people do ponder these things. I mean, it's not a bang, bang, shoot 'em up kind of a play.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound like that at all. But it does sound as if it raises a great many historical issues and mm-hmm. touches on some historical truths.
And I had a lot of help from various people, of Verdine Kong. A lot of different Hawaiians have vetted the play. Visitors and residents have laughed and cried throughout readings, and now we've gone to full performances. I mean, they've used words like excellent, awesome, powerful in their descriptions of the play. So
it's a one person drama.
It's a one person drama, and it's
done with as product of your research.
Yes, but it's a one. It's about a Native Hawaiian, and it's acted by a Native Hawaiian.
Mm-hmm.
What a novel concept.
Yeah.
And Moranai Kanikoa, Maui High School graduate, also has a University of Southern California master's in drama, is the actor, and he's been doing a tremendous job. There's the number of lines he has to memorize in order to act out the play, they're more than the number of words in Hamlet. And he does a great job. So that debunks the theory that you can't find a Native Hawaiian who's qualified to do a film or something like that.
Well, I'm not sure if that theory would find too much coverage these days anyway, but yeah. all the more reason to move ahead with a story like this. How long have you been working on it?
I started about 35 years ago. A friend of mine named Wes Osano wanted us to do a film script, and we tried and didn't work. Then about in the 1980s, I met William S. Merwin, the poet laureate,
sure.
And I was interviewing him, and I told him about the story, and he and his wife Paula were just fascinated by it. We were having coffee in Kahului on Maui, and I said, listen, go ahead and do it if you want to. You know, it deserves to be told. And then about 15 years ago, I saw in the bookstore there was a thing called Folding Cliffs, and he'd done basically an ode to Kolau.
Uh-huh.
But it was, all of these have been told from mainly Piilani's point of view. And so my friend.
Whose point of view?
Piilani, excuse me, is Kolau's wife.
Uh-huh.
And it's the stories have been told from the wife's point of view, because she was the lone survivor.
Mm-hmm.
My friend came back about 4 years ago and said, let's try it again. And so I wrote a song. I want to make sure I got something out of it. I wrote a song, and then I wrote I started writing the script, and then I wrote a kind of like a monologue. And I looked down at it after 40 pages. I said, you know, this is a one-man play.
Yeah.
And so I went hunting for a turkey. Well, no, not a turkey. I went hunting for something, and I got something else.
Oh, that's usually how it works with the
yeah,
with the
and
work
you know,
like
just
this.
Follow your muse and try to do the best you can.
Well, I'm sure you did, Gary. And thanks very much for talking with us this morning.
Thank you.
Gary Kubota is the author of The Legend of Ko'olau, a play that will be performed in its Honolulu premiere Friday, May 16th at the Hawaii Theater. Details are at hpr2.org.
For 3 long years, no one could find them in the wild Nepali land. But leprosy did not forget them. Took first the sun and then the man. When she hid his bones deep in the forest, Piilani said, I'm going with you anywhere. You're the only one for me. No matter what.